This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is a recurrent guest, Larry Allen of Allen Federal. Larry, welcome back to the show, man.
Mark, thanks for having me back. Great to be here.
Always a good time. I want to do a little bit of kind of a year-end wrap, but things that people are going to have to be paying careful attention to in 2014. And oddly enough, both of us consult in all of these areas. So tell the people exactly what Larry Allen does and who you are.
Mark, as many people in the area know, I'm the head of Allen Federal Business Partners. I have 24 years of experience in government acquisition, a lot of it with commercial items, commercial services, things of that nature. At Allen Federal, we work with companies of all sizes to improve their government business in terms of strategic partnership development, relationship management, market-based intelligence, the full range of training that they might need or their dealers might need. An important part of what I do, in addition to all of that, is making sure that that training encompasses how to do it right, which is simply you want the government to write you checks. You don't want to have to write checks back to the government.
There you go. It's like tax time. We want to make sure our clients get more from Sam than they give to Sam. Mm-hmm. I should also point out that for 19 of those years, Larry was the president of the Coalition for Government Procurement. And in that role, he advised both government and industry on all facets of GSA schedules. And when I have clients that need that type of help, Larry's the short list. So let's start with the latest headline, at least headline for our market, and that's the DHS Eagle II contract, where I don't know, 15 or so people won, and now twice that many protests.
Twice that many protests. That's exactly right, Mark. Eagle been plagued by delays getting it out the door. Now it's being plagued by protests. Perhaps to use an adequate simile, eagle can't leave the nest. And there are a number of protests around it, which isn't entirely surprising given the magnitude of this procurement, because you see protests virtually all the time in this indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity world, where an agency is going to only award a certain number of contracts to offering companies. And if you're not an awardee, then you spent a lot of money and time putting your offer together, and many people feel, well, it's worth protesting so that the government takes another look at what I put in. And also, frankly, because there's been a short history of government agencies just allowing anybody who protests to come in onto the program anyway, even though they weren't one of the initial awardees. So unawarded companies see that. They think, well, for a little bit of extra money on the margin, I might be able to get what I want, and so they file a protest.
Okay. Now, Eagle One ran for how many years? It was seven?
7 years, yeah. A couple of years longer than it was originally supposed to run. Some of that was reflected because of the popularity of the program, but some of it was reflected because of the delay in getting Eagle Two situated.
Well, there's that, and then when it was supposed to be, we had the shutdown.
Right.
Yay. God, what a mess. But you know, the strategy here for a multi-year vehicle, if you don't get on it, I interviewed Max Peterson for a set of CDs we recorded a while ago. Max being at the time the head federal sales guy at CDW. He's currently with Amazon. But Max said for product vendors, and this was probably 4 or 5 years ago, for product vendors, the trifecta was the schedule, the NIH contract, and soup. Mm-hmm. So if you were an IT product vendor and you had those three contracts, you had something that virtually every federal agency could and would buy off of.
Well, I think that's still very much the case. And it really, these protests around DHS Eagle Mark are a foreshadowing. Foreshadowing because as we sit here, today is the day that the offers are due under Soup 5.
Yeah.
And so very quickly we
drum roll.
That's right. If you haven't got them in now, don't be late. Late is late in the government market. Today's the 16th. Don't wait till midnight. So what we'll see in the first calendar quarter of 2014, I'm sure, is a raft of protests surrounding the non-award decisions that NASA makes pursuant to getting Soup 5 out the door and up and running. And like many agencies, I think NASA has tried to do everything that they could do to prevent successful protests. You can't do anything for a nice big program like Eagle or Soup or the GSA OASIS contracts, which will also be awarded coming in the first calendar quarter of 14. You can't prevent people from protesting, but what you can try to do is make it nice and neat and clear cut so that there are no successful protests, and that can get your procurement up and running just a little bit faster.
So really the best answer here is to be part of that first winning crowd, but even that, if a procurement is thrown out, is no guarantee.
It's no guarantee, and it can be very frustrating if you're an awardee, which is an excellent point. Because, if, like everybody else, your company has put in a lot of time and resources to get this contract. You've been awarded this contract. You have people who are itching to buy from it. You have marketing people who have lined up business in the pipeline specifically for this vehicle. And when you have protests, all that really does is put sugar in the gas tank. And you can't get going.
Right, yeah, and I stuck my head in Tom's studio when he was on break this morning, Tom Temin, and I said, you know, my bet is that we're just going to have 27 more awardees on Eagle 2. And, you know, it's kind of a callous, jaded statement, but it's the easiest way for the government to deal with it and get the contract out the door.
It is the easiest way for the government to deal with it. It's not the way that I would recommend, but I can understand why agencies do that. When you have all these companies on the contract, business will sort itself out.
But it's harder for the contracting officer to manage.
It's harder for the contracting officer to manage. But over time, and probably in realistically a very short period of time, the winners and losers in the business market will sort themselves out. Mm-hmm. And I would guess that the great majority of companies that get added because they protested and the government just capitulated, congratulations, you're on, but let me know just how much business you've gotten in 2 years from this vehicle, because everybody who had the resources to handle it well was an original awardee, and I would guess most of the business would go even just to a fraction of those companies.
Yeah. Well, if you look at a contract like Soup, there's always been a very limited number of vendors awarded Soup, and all of them have profited to greater or lesser degrees from the contract. But it's been a small group of awardees because Soup does not have a ton of people managing all of this stuff. It's more like a community of vendors and buyers.
It is, and Joanne Wojtek, the NASA Soup Program Director, has been very consistent in saying that while they expect a few more companies to be added to Soup 5, it's not going to be a sea change. Mark, precisely for the reason you just mentioned, there's a limited amount of management bandwidth. One of the beauties of Soup today is that it is managed very, very well. Both the contractors and the users cite that as a primary advantage of using the Soup program. NASA knows that. They want to maintain it. So I don't know that they will be as susceptible to protestitis as everybody else is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you don't win, buy one of the winners. But and, you know, that happens too. So we have a couple of minutes left on our first segment here. So I want to discuss some things that we had agreed to prior to the show. Let's touch briefly on contractor teaming agreements.
Now, contractor teaming agreements, interestingly, are an area that's getting a lot of renewed attention. These are beasts largely that we see within the GSA multiple award schedule world, and they're not really well understood either in government or, frankly, by many contractors. Contractor teaming agreements can be an extremely useful tool where a group of companies, all of which have their own schedule contract, come together to provide a unified solution to a government customer under a schedule RFQ. So everybody has privity of contract. Everybody has the ability to touch the customer. It's not a prime sub relationship, Mark, even though it looks a lot like a prime sub in many respects, and that's where the confusion comes in.
Peer relationship, but it you know, I've heard about them recently from clients, pardon me, who are concerned because if a contracting officer writes them in such a way that it is a small business CTA, then your partnerships are limited if the scope demands, you know, serious product, et cetera.
Because everybody in a teaming agreement has privity of contract with the government, all of the members of that team have to be small, Mark. I think that that's to your point. And if you are not a small business and you're a scheduled contract holder, then you can't participate as a team member on a small business set aside. And the thing that's important to understand about this for all of the members of the team, as I said, look, guys, each one of you has privity of contract. If you knowingly allow or even just recklessly allow a large business to be part of your small business set-aside teaming arrangement, you've signed up that you are in compliance with all the terms and conditions of that procurement, and you're not. That can be a fraud case that comes back to haunt you, or you can be fined and lose more money than you made on the teaming agreement to begin with.
There you go. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'll be back with Larry, and we're going to be talking about a lot of issues impacting the market today, tomorrow, and well into 2014. Back after these. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. I'm here with Larry Allen of Allen Federal. You can find Larry at Allen, A-L-L-E-N, federal.com. I suggest you go there and sign up for his weekly newsletter. It comes out Monday morning, and it's a great way to get a little bit of a head start on the week. It's short, easy to read, but it gets your brain working. Another thing that's in the news right now is this reverse auction thing. And I heard an interview this morning with the someone from GAO saying, you know, not all vendors like this. You know, I don't know any vendors that like this. So number one, GAO, get a grip. Talk to real vendors. No vendors like this. But what are the bigger issues here, Larry?
Well, there are a couple of big issues here, Mark. One is that, to your point, reverse auctions are now being used more in government acquisition than probably any time in the past decade. One of the main reasons for that is that GSA has recently set up its own reverse auction capability. Prior to that, most of the auctions in the government space were run by a third-party company, FedBid. And we've talked about FedBid a couple of times.
Yeah, we have.
And FedBid does reverse auctions on behalf of government agencies, and they use a lot of standing contracts like a GSA schedule, like NASA SOUP that we spoke about in the first segment. But the problem with FedBid is that they don't always, they're not always known for robust transparency, and that can make it difficult for contractors to understand exactly what they won and the price that they won it at and how they report all of that information that they have to report for contract compliance purposes. GSA has now started to use reverse auctions for some medical devices and for what they consider to be commodity IT. Hint for those of you listening to Mark's show, yours definition of commodity IT and the government's are not the same. Theirs tend to be much more expansive than yours. So And this is all part, Mark, of GSA's drive to be what I call the low price leader. Some would say the cheapest guy in town. You have reverse auctions.
When can we expect those infomercials?
That's right. Well, you know, you see the ads for Bob's Furniture. I'm wondering, you know, when we're going to have Dan's discounts, Dan Tangerlini, the administrator of GSA. So you've got that phenomena coming on in the government where really reverse auctions take quality and best value right out of the equation. And a lot of companies are rethinking how they interact, not just with reverse auctions, which would seem obvious, but with GSA itself because of their drive to be the low price leader. So there's a downside to all of this. In a race to the bottom, you're always going to get to the bottom eventually, but you may not like the view from there.
Right. And one of the other things that caught my attention during the interview that Mr. Temin did with the GAO person this morning was the apparent lack of enthusiasm and number of bidders on a number of the reverse auctions. And she seemed perplexed at that. And I'm going, I'm sorry, people are opting not to bid. Yes?
They certainly are opting not to bid. I've spoken to several of my clients that have made business decisions not to participate in reverse auctions. That's not the type of company they are. That's not the part of the marketplace that they want to be in. For some of these people, a reverse auction tool does not fit their business model. You know, there's a tendency with reverse auctions, perhaps more than other procurement methods, to try to use it in areas where it really doesn't work well. That would be for anything like a buy of office systems furniture, anything that smacks of complex or even semi-complex IT solutions, anything that needs some degree of customization. Those are all areas that don't really, professional services, don't work well for reverse auctions, and yet you see government agencies using this tool for all sorts of things. And it shouldn't be a surprise that quality vendors from whatever segment you're working with elect to go elsewhere and focus on the segments of the market where they know they can add value. And frankly, folks, if you're using reverse auctions, you're going to get the type of companies you think you're going to get.
Well, you know, what I see when I see reverse auctions and FSI and LPTA sort of come together, I see a giant game of Jenga. And sooner or later, we're going to have a collapse.
And Mark, I'm totally in agreement with you on that. I think that when you start having a General Services Administration whose job they see is to be low price, federal strategic sourcing, which is all price-based, they have an initiative to drive down price at the contract level on their scheduled contracts. You take all of those together and you can see an agency that really is interested in doing business with small businesses that offer you the lowest price things possible. And there's nothing wrong with small businesses. We're a small business. Your business is small. My business is small.
Darn tootin'.
So, but, you know, there are people, my point about that really is to be facetious because GSA, I think, plays a lot of lip service to small businesses without actually...
Well, so does SBA, but we won't say that.
Right, not always delivering. But, you know, my end point about this, Mark, is that anytime people in procurement think they know what the customer wants, that's a dangerous place for procurement to be. Because historically, customers have shown procurement that they don't know what the customer really wants. And customers have a funny way of going elsewhere to find solutions when procurement people thrust upon them things they think they should have.
Yeah, well, it reminds me when I see that situation, it reminds me of politicians that start their talk with the American people want. Yeah, like true. You have a clue. I do want to point out the one thing that the GAO spokesperson said this morning, that there are no regulations for the FAR about reverse auctions.
That's very true. It's and in fact, if you dial the clock back to 15 years ago, Mark, auctions, reverse auctions, and government acquisition were very taboo. They were prohibited in some cases by regulation. And now you see that in a time of tight budgets, time when people are trying to stretch their dollars, which is not inherently a bad business decision. We all want to manage our money wisely.
Oh, yeah.
You've seen reverse auctions come back. But just as the FAR was written for primarily product acquisitions, and now we live in a service-based government marketplace, so too is the FAR absent or largely silent on reverse auctions. That's an issue. And you saw this actually come up last week at a House hearing where both GSA and VA procurement leaders testify. And the VA leaders were adamant in saying, we will not proceed with reverse auctions until we, at least at the VA level, have a set of rules by which we're going to conduct this business, and we thoroughly train our people on how to use this tool. And I think that's exactly what yep. every agency should do.
Yeah, and frankly, that's what the GAO person was saying, that OFPP right. needs to deliver guidance. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio. More with Larry after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I am Mark AmTower. I had no choice in that matter. Somebody had to do it, and they volunteered me. I'm here with Larry Allen, Allen Federal, A-L-L-E-N, federal.com. Larry, you and I both do homework for our clients, but we also teach our clients how to do homework. And, you know, there's a I'm trying, and actually I want to enlist you in this. I want to identify 101 free resources for contractors to do research. So this is an ebook that you and I will work on in early 2014. I already have a list of about 25, but you know, tip of the iceberg kind of crap. But one of the things that people don't use, and you do, and I do, are agency websites.
Agency websites that can actually provide some good information. Like anything government, they're highly variable, but you'd be surprised, you wouldn't be, but maybe your listeners would, about the information, the who, the what, the when, the where, and the why you can find on some agency websites. You can find good email and contact information for program managers, program executive officers.
Current.
Contracting officials. These are the people that you want to be talking to introduce yourself and to better understand what it is that particular agency or department is doing. Some agencies even put up information on, here's our procurement plan for information technology for the next fiscal year. Here are the procurements that we think we're going to be doing, their approximate size, and even to the extent that they know, the methods they're going to use to make those procurements. The website for small businesses at the Department of Homeland Security comes immediately to mind. And it's not just for small businesses. Any business can go on there. And, but my point is the DHS small business advocates make an excellent choice when they choose to put their agency's upcoming procurements on that website. They regularly go out and ping all parts of DHS to find out what's going on. And it's right there. Right there is the plan, right on the DHS website for everybody to see. And it's free. And you're absolutely right. There are so many free resources in the government, not just the websites, but this is something that I know you touch on in your training. I touch on it in my training. And it's not necessarily, although we'd like to think we're smarter than our clients, that's not always necessarily the case. What it is that we know where to look. And so we know where these free resources are.
You gotta know where the bodies are buried.
That's right.
You know, and, you know, I had a call last week. I did a lot of speaking in the 90s and early 2000s at business-to-business conferences, and I was the business-to-government guy. And a lot of the other speakers who are experts in B2B only remember me when one of their clients says, you know, we need to reach X agency in the government. How do we do this? You know, so they'll give me a buzz. But, you know, this one guy said, you know, called and said, we have a client that wants to penetrate this agency, but they don't want to do HQ. They want to do all the field offices. How do we do this? you know, how much do you want to spend? Do you just want a half hour of consulting time? Or do you want me to build the database?
Right.
You know? I can tell you how to find this in about 5 minutes. But I'm going to charge you for at least an hour. So.
Well, and that's the thing. People don't always understand. The reason we can answer their questions in 5 minutes is that I think between the two of us, we have well over 50 years of experience in this market.
Correct. We won't go how far over 50, but yeah, we put in a little time here.
Right.
So the homework's important, but there's a lot of other things. You know, there's the FBO. People still don't understand how to make a request of FPDS. You know, there and then there's something as simple as a schedule sales query. Hello, here's the food chain, boys and girls.
Right. You go onto the GSA website, and what I like to say that. It's so easy, even a former association president can use it. The GSA schedule sales query comes up. You can get all kinds of reports through it. Total schedule sales by schedule.
For 7 years.
By special item number.
Yep.
You can slice it and dice it with enough reports so that you know who your major competitors are. You know what they're doing. But
you
also,
know if the schedule's growing or shrinking.
Right, but not necessarily just your competitors. If you're a smaller or medium-sized business or even a new market entry of any size, these are companies that, hey, you might want to team up with, you might want to form an alliance with, see if you can pursue some business together. I talked to two companies last week who were contemplating just such a marriage. So, you know, they can be incredibly useful for that information, and it's free. FPDS may not be the easiest thing to use, but it's free, and you have all kinds of information like the station we're on now, Federal News Radio, runs one of the best websites in the business, federalnewsradio.com.
Archive all the shows.
All Mark, you know, shows, all of the information
Jason's
that's
shows,
going
man.
On in the government marketplace. I'm an exciting guy. I read that website a couple of times a day.
You know, there's a lot of stuff there, and, you know, it does seem mundane, but if you don't have somebody in your organization doing this on a regular basis, you know, you're going to get behind the curve, and you're going to fall off the edge of the earth.
You're missing the who, what, when, where, and why, and it's all there just for your time.
Yep. You were the president of a major association for 19 years. And thank you, by the way, for inviting me to speak several times. I appreciated that. And I always got great feedback from your members on that. I hope you did as well.
Yes.
But let's talk a little bit about associations and professional groups. Obviously, we're not going to go there, but Tech America is having some issues at the moment with former employees. But how should one... a vendor select, and I believe all vendors should be in at least one association.
I agree with you.
How do they select?
Well, I think depending on the function that you perform for your company, that may determine what the type of association you participate in. So if you're in sales and business development, particularly in the IT area, a group like ACT-IAC. You see a lot of sales and marketing people in ACT-IAC that participate in that.
And see a lot of them at AFSEA chapters, too.
Exactly. So, yeah. A lot of those people. If you're doing more contract management or more senior level things, then things like the Professional Service Council, contract geeks and the schedules arena tend to hang out at my previous association, the Coalition for Government Procurement. You do have highly technical people that are over at Tech America. So it kind of depends where you are in your company. There are many good associations to belong to, but I absolutely agree with your basic tenet that you should belong to at least one association in your company. And associations are a great way to learn without having to reinvent the wheel.
Yep.
You always get a chance to learn from others in your peer group, people who have varying levels of experience that you can glean off of. They bring in some very good speakers, usually from the government, sometimes people like you and me who may have one or two things to say.
Yep.
And they're good places where you can get, even with medium participation, an excellent return on your association investment.
There you go. And you have the regionals like Northern Virginia Tech and even over in Maryland, the Howard Tech Council. Both of these have interesting, and Northern Virginia Tech somewhat larger B2G groups.
Oh, absolutely.
So, but, you know, in Northern Virginia Tech, Bobby's built that into an enormous powerhouse. I mean, I don't even know how many special interest groups they have, but I've spoken at least two or three different ones over there, and man, they draw a crowd. Everybody's engaged. It's just a tremendous amount of fun speaking for them. And then you have groups like APMP for proposal managers, NCMA mm-hmm. for the contract side. But one of the things that a lot of people don't know is that groups for government employees in specific disciplines often have industry openings.
Well, and that's exactly right. And you go back to the earlier comment I made about ACT IACT. I mean, the ACT grew out, or the Industry Agency Council grew out of the old government, Federal Government Information Processing Council.
For Gypsy, the Federation of Government Information Processing Councils. Right,
right. Back in the history books.
1983.
But IACT is the industry arm of that. And the rest of that is made up by government. And if you go into the veterans arena, veterans healthcare arena, you have the Association of American Medical Surgeons of the U.S., AMSIS, mm-hmm. and AMSIS sustaining members are the industry portion of that. And AMSIS SM is something that anybody in federal healthcare that's doing business with the VA absolutely should be a part of.
Right. And if you have anything to do with facilities, a group like the International Facilities Management Association mm-hmm. has a very active DC chapter and a nationwide federal group. So look at those associations, boys and girls. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest today is Larry Allen of Allen Federal. Again, you can find Larry at allenfederal.com, A-L-L-E-N. We both believe that communication is key. So communication between industry and government, between industry vendors, et cetera. But you have an interesting slant. Intra-company communications. We have some issues here occasionally.
We do have issues with intra-company communications. And at the outset, I want to frame this by having companies understand that, look, not only does the government look at itself as one customer, whether you agree with that or not, it's undeniable. The government looks at itself as one customer.
Yep.
When they look at you, they see you as one company. Now, the reality is that your company could be broken into any one of a number of divisions, all of which are autonomous or at least semi-autonomous, and you rarely cross-pollinate.
Right.
Probably for profit reasons, you all have your own business lines.
You often see companies competing against
right.
different.
But the government doesn't really understand that. And that's important for a number of reasons. It's important not least of all because if you've got a part of your company, same company name, but it's a different division, probably in a different geographic location from where you are. But if they're doing something wrong with their government business, that can impact your government business very quickly for the simple reason that the government sees ABC Corp on the logo, and then everybody in ABC Corp has some explaining to do about why it is they shouldn't be treated just like these guys who are goofing off over on the West Coast. Just pick on the West Coast because it's early and they're not awake yet.
There you go. They will be when the show ends. We don't care.
When you have to have these intra-company communications is when you have different things going on with your pricing, when you have different things going on with how you go to market, things about where you get your products from that you're selling to the government. Because if you're not having those discussions, the chances of you being in violation of your government contract are pretty high. And if you think that it costs time and money to sit down and have the occasional briefing with your companions in other business areas inside your company, I can assure you it is far more expensive to have a problem where you have to hire a government contracts attorney and start having discussions with the Department of Justice. So my advice to companies is regularly plan for intra-company discussions where you're talking about what it is you're doing in the government market, where you're talking about how that does impact or could impact your commercial business, how what you're doing commercially can impact federal. These are manifestly discussions worth having, and you'll be happier in the long run if you took a day every 6 months to have them than if you have to take multiple days compiling a case with your government contracts attorney explaining why you didn't.
Yeah, and it's always fun to pay your government contracts attorney for when you're stepping in something or after you've stepped in something. Ooh, what a thrill.
Well, government. The great thing about it is government contract attorneys sometimes hire people like us to be expert witnesses.
There you go.
We don't work for free either.
No, there you go. Well, they're going to hire you. They don't want my opinion in the courtroom. I can't be coached on what to say. Things occur of their own volition. The intercompany communications, absolutely key. External communications have become, I believe, more of an issue because of all of the event snafu. We have fewer feds out there, this kind of thing. I really believe that 2014 is going to be the year, a major tipping point in LinkedIn for both federal participation. The federal people are there, but I believe I'm seeing more participation by them. The vendor community has been there, and it's a great way to reach out to people. So I know you're on LinkedIn, and yes. I'm going to do some coaching for you on that. But how are you currently using it? What do you see here?
Well, I think you're exactly right about this, Mark. You know, when you have a government marketplace where there are far fewer shows, and the shows that there are still in existence maybe don't quite have the attendance that they used to have. You have to find some way to interact with your government customer. We mentioned earlier in the show associations, which are a good way to do it. But so too is LinkedIn. They have 1.9 million groups,
yep,
that have all kinds of government participation in them. There are multiple. There are more contract-related groups than either you or I could belong to.
Yep.
Some of them are better than others, but all of them communicate a certain level of information.
Peter Weischer runs one of the better ones in the GSAVA contracts.
He does, and one of the things I like about Peter's group is that he doesn't allow people merely to use it as a place to publish their latest ruminations.
Right, yeah.
So there's a good place for that, but it's nice to have a robust discussion. But the other way, I actually used LinkedIn just last week to help a client find someone in DOD that they needed to talk to. And I went in and sent the request to be linked into this person who's a major command level individual. He got right back to me after he saw my LinkedIn profile, and that client's going to have a meeting with that senior person in January.
You can't ask for a better result.
Right, and I think that, you know, having a good LinkedIn profile and using that as a tool really gives you a sense of legitimacy. You know, chances of you being able to find some of these email addresses or phone numbers for people you're looking for by doing a simple Google search are pretty good. But without that context, you know, look, this guy's a busy guy. He's running
around. He ain't reading all the emails.
Right, no. And he ain't reading all the emails. And if you don't have some legitimacy that jumps off the page, which a LinkedIn profile, LinkedIn positioning can give you, then that's not going to be helpful.
Right. I'm going to change tracks here. I want to wrap up with the misconception that business was difficult or did not occur in 2013. What's your thought here?
Well, certainly in 2013 for the government fiscal year, Mark, you saw a lot of headlines about sequestration. And at the end of 2013, the beginning of 2014, the government shut down, which it seems to be a Washington habit right now, whether it's quarterbacks, star pitchers, or the government. perhaps they should change the names of the Redskins to the Shutdowns. But business actually did get transacted in 2013. Just by going through the IT dashboard, the federally maintained IT dashboard is one example, there were over 700 projects that were listed as major acquisitions and well over billions of dollars that had been committed just through the first three quarters of the year on IT. So somebody was getting that business. And you company that with reports from other sources that we know that are out there saying that a lot of incumbent government contractors actually saw their business increase in FY13. And you know that while the government fiscal year for 2013 may not have been a record buster, neither was it an entire washout. The government was and is open for business. And there are going to be some, just as there were opportunities in 2013 and people did good business, so too is that going to be the case for this fiscal year.
There you go. Larry, it is always a pleasure to have you on the show. A lot of meat here today. Briefly tell people again what it is Allen Federal brings to the market.
Allen Federal works with companies of all sizes to improve their government business through relationship development, management, intelligence, and contract compliance.
And there you go. And I add a little bit to that mix on the marketing side, and that would include identifying people with whom you need relationships. Not everybody out there needs to know everybody. And keep in mind that while meeting an appointee is a great photo op, it rarely accomplishes anything substantial. Not meaning to slam appointees, but I do.
Mark, you're absolutely right, and I actually have worked with companies who don't really, can't wrap their minds around the fact that meeting with the assistant secretary isn't actually going to drive them any business. But what you said is true, and listeners, you should listen to what Mark says.
And thank you for listening to AmTower Off Center. You can find both Larry and myself on LinkedIn, and I suggest you do so. Thanks again for listening to AmTower Off Center. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.